Welcome to the opening episode of Rebirth, a limited podcast series produced by Advaya, a platform for transformative education. I'm your host, Tammy Gan, and this four-part series is produced in partnership with Stella McCartney Beauty, a conscious alternative to luxury skincare. This episode features Antonia Estela Perez, a Chilean-American clinical herbalist, gardener, educator, community organizer, co-founder, and artist born and raised in New York City.
Right, the plants are so wise. Like, they are our ancestors. They've been here and they're sacred. And that humility and that continuous wonder and being in a kinship relationship with them of like, let me listen. Let me listen to what they have to say.
The arrival of spring brings with it more abundant opportunities to deepen our intimacies with our more than human plant kin. Embedding ourselves in and relearning plant stories are key to collective healing and liberation. This is deep decolonial and abolition work. In this conversation, we uncover how it is we can seed these medicinal, intimate, regenerative relationships, exploring personal and practical ways to reconnect. We begin with discussing Antonia's intertwined familial and land history, being first generation born in New York to parents from Chile.
I wanted to open with acknowledging, as you've shared elsewhere, that your relationships with the land and with the more than human have been cultivated with the help of your parents. So I would love to open with hearing a little bit about their story, how your upbringing and formative years led to the kind of person you've become. So kind of going back a little bit into your own history and how that informs your current work.
I just want to acknowledge that I'm calling from Tongva territory in California, so-called California in Los Angeles, which actually weaves into the question that you just asked about kind of my history and my parents, because my parents grew up in Santiago and also in the outsides of Santiago, rural Santiago, which is reminding me so much of these lands. And as I was sharing with you earlier, they are very similar due to the latitude that they're in, Santiago being 33 degrees and Los Angeles 34 degrees latitude. And so the plants that are here, the climate is very similar, as well as the mountains and it being a valley. So I've had the privilege and gift of being able to return to my parents' homelands ever since I was a child and got to spend time with my grandma and learn plants from her, learn the history of those lands, be, in Spanish, it's like acurrucada, like loved on, like, what would be the word? Like rocked by that landscape. So really tall mountains, the Andes Mountains, and those landscapes are what held my parents growing up. And there's something really powerful, I think, of growing up in a landscape like that, any landscape, but particularly those lands with the mountains just consistently surrounding you, of like, nature is here. And no matter how tall of a building you build, it does not compete with these mountains. The land there experiences a lot of earthquakes as well. So there's a lot of reverence and respect for the earth. So my parents instilled in me those values of respecting the earth, understanding that we're guests on these lands. We're here as passerbys, as guests that need to leave this land better than we found it. And those values also, my grandma instilled in me as well. So want to name her because I feel like so much of what I've learned about land and plants came from her, from being sensitive, from learning how to be gentle with plants, learning respect, which I also learned from both my mom and my dad, Estela and Jorge. And so they grew up in Chile and then immigrated to the States due to political reasons. But while being in New York where they landed, I think having grown up surrounded by, you know, using plants as medicine, maybe even, you know, not naming it herbalism, like my grandma, you know, today with this lens, we'd be saying she's an herbalist or a healer. That's what she devoted her life to, teaching people about nutrition and herbs and using food as medicine. But my parents landing in New York, I think there was a desire from them to find their connection to land, feeling really displaced from their homelands. So they were invited by other Chilean friends to go to the Poconos. And that's been a really important landscape for them in their relationship, immigrating and settling in New York in the Napa territory. So that relationship that they formed with that territory outside of New York City was passed on to my brother and I as well. So every weekend we'd go to the Poconos, spend time in the woods. And it was really important for them to have us build that sensitivity and feel comforted and comfortable relating with the land. So my upbringing was like, okay, I'm living in the city during the week. On the weekends, I'm experiencing the woods. I think my whole life, it's been a huge question that I'm always unlayering is that relationship between like the suburb and the urban, and what that relationship is, and seeing how, well, they're intricately connected, but also with that delayering understanding how these lands have been disturbed and changed through colonization. So New York City hasn't always been the city, obviously. It was this very diverse land, you know, with so much biodiversity of animals, of plants, of the people that inhabited that land. And so the plants really have guided me in that opening of and curiosity of knowing and unlayering like what has been here before. So I really thank my parents for inviting us into being able to relate with land and sharing their own love for the earth, and making sure that those values were really present for my brother and I.
Thank you for sharing that. I think when you shared that phrase about being rocked by plants, I think it's such a great kind of way to visualize our relationship or a relationship with plants that's possible. I think the visual imagery of being kind of rocked to sleep or like just rocked and held by plants is something that not a lot of people, unfortunately, I think living such urbanized lives, right, as you were getting to, kind of don't have the privilege and the opportunity to have such intimate relationships with plants, even though a lot of our ancestors would have had that. kind of more closer relationship. And because of the way that things have modernized and urbanized, we're kind of getting further and further away from that. For many people who are listening to this will also feel kind of foreign to land, foreign to plants, and are kind of searching for that deep connection that I think a lot of people know with their bodies, but don't know with their kind of minds, and need that kind of push and help to reconnect that. And so that's, I think, a useful way to get into that kind of next big question, which I think for me, when I look at your work, a theme that emerges is the work of kind of embedding. And I think that word has kind of found its way into my vocabulary consciously in the past few months. And I think your personal embedding to your plant stories and your familial histories, your ancestral histories, but also through kind of empowering people through urban kura, which we will get to start getting people to embed themselves in nature, in community. And you've said on Deem Journal, in interview with them, that there's something so powerful that shifts inside us when we try to go back to the source. And relatedly, you've also described your work as rooted in your passion for sharing knowledge that interrupts notions of individualism and separatism from nature to grow towards collaborative and symbiotic communities. So I'd love for us to kind of really unpack those things. So unpacking kind of embedding and how that's kind of a way of describing your work, and also how your work kind of really focuses on rerouting the individual back into nature, back into histories, back into kind of land and communities, but without also kind of understanding that I think like individualism is something that is not necessarily as present in ancestral and ecological, more ancestral and ecological cultures, and that individualism is kind of a notion that has really taken off in kind of neoliberalism, capitalism, enhanced by like late stage capitalism. So acknowledging that not everyone understands individualism in that way, but that today in this kind of economy and this kind of society, that individualism is highly encouraged. So embedding is so important, but kind of just giving that context and wondering what kind of comes up for you in relation to your work.
So many pieces. I love this. I'll try to weave it all together. One thing that came up based on the question I was answering before and this around embedding and rooting to source, and kind of that question that I was saying that I've been holding around, like, I don't know if I said this, but like, what is my place and my story on the land that I grew up in, New York City, Lenape Hoking? How did I get here? Has been this consistent question, like, wait, how did I get here? Being a settler on that land, but also my parents not having chosen to be on those lands. One of the ways that I've felt connected to myself and to the earth and to my ancestors and to my landing on this place on earth, or that ecology on earth, has been through both understanding my parents' migration, but also learning about history and colonization, transatlantic slave trade, neoliberalism, United States imperialism, how that has really shaped the world that we currently live in today. We're all interconnected with that story, and that story is at the center of it all is resources and plants. And so I'm gonna jump to this other point. And I'll get back to that. But as I was saying, that question that I've also held for a lot of my life, the relationship between the urban and the rural, learning about the plants that were growing in New York City and observing what was growing there, understanding like oh, this was not always this built city. What is underneath the concrete, this, the river, the Mahicantuck, what that we know as the Hudson River, this body of water that's, for me, was this consistent reminder of, like, this is sacred land, this is ancient land, the stories that that water carries. For me has been so informative, and it's a body of water that's also rocked me. I've lived near that body of water my whole life, both in the city and then also upstate New York. And learning about the plants that grow near the river, which is where I do a lot of my plant walks in New York City. So I find that learning about plants in New York City or wherever you are is such a beautiful way to begin to both acknowledge the land that you're on, that is nature, that everything is nature. This computer has been built and made from resources, the windows, the construction that we live inside of, like, it's all been built upon resources and land. But I feel that when we begin to meet the plants, we realize that we're not alone and that we're in relationship to other species beyond just ourselves. And as we begin to learn about the plants, begin to observe the animals, the insects that are living in the plants, that are living in the trees, that are eating from that vegetation, what the relationship is between those animals and those plants, what's our relationship between those plants, but also how did those plants get there? And what's the story between the people that brought those plants? How did they relate to those plants? What was the medicine that they used those plants for, but also how did those people take care of those plants? And I think it begins to expand our worldview to recognize the ways that we've always been in relationship to plants, and that both plants and people have been moved either consensually or non-consensually. And for me, it gives me this sense of wonder, and also this sense of, like, oh, we're, like, not alone. And I feel that's really beautiful and empowering for that feeling of just, like, opening up our worldview and lens. And then also on a practical scale, of, like, well, how can these plants also support my health? And also, how can I support this plant in thriving? And what does this plant tell me about the land? What does this plant tell me about the medicine that I might need or that the land might need? So that's what comes up. that's just one thought that was coming up there. But in terms of, you know, symbiotic relationships, I think about, and in a way, what I was just saying, like, how are we being in reciprocity with plants as well? I think herbalism, we're in a place where it's also being commodified, and a lot of folks are focused on, you know, what can this plant do for me, right? We're just, again, individual, in that individualist mindset, like, what can this do for me? Versus thinking, well, what can I do for this plant? Or maybe I can grow this plant so that this plant that may be endangered has more space to grow. And beyond just what can this plant do for me, the pollinators, right? And what are the other species that live off of this plant? So that for me is really important, because herbalism can also be romanticized and thinking, oh, well, this is just a way of, like, connecting back with the land and it's good. But anything that gets commodified needs to be questioned, and the approach of relating to something that is of the earth needs to be questioned, because, as I said, capitalism, slavery, colonialism, it's all about resources. So what for me really needs to shift is how are we relating to the land? Like, we've forgotten in a big way what it means to be human, that we're caretakers, that we have a responsibility. As I was saying in the beginning, my parents taught, you know, we're guests on these lands, we're passing through, and that we also have a responsibility to make this place better, that my brother and I need to make the world a more equitable place because of all these injustices that are here, right? So how do we, with our work, make the world a more beautiful place, and beyond just our work, in our relationships with each other, with our family, with the plants, not only thinking about ourselves, but how do my actions impact other beings? And to me, that is part of that symbiosis, or it being in collaborative community. How can I understand my gifts, and how do my gifts help the greater ecology of this earth or the communities that I'm part of, instead of being in competition? I think in social media right now, like this pandemic that we're in, of like social media and the way that it's impacting our our nervous systems, is it really reaches to this like part of ourselves that capitalism has done such a good job of extracting from us, and like impacting our sense of self-worth. We're always like competing with one another. That's one of like capitalism's values, right? So I think as we relate with plants, it's always really important to think about the reciprocity that needs to be there in order for us to make sure that those ecosystems continue to thrive and create more ecosystems. But I also think about, you know, the microbiome in our bodies, right? Like, we're feeding the microbes, and then they're giving us, strengthening our immune system. The mycelium underneath the forest, helping to connect tree roots and communicate, or us exhaling and us inhaling the tree's oxygen. There's such beautiful reminders of how everything is interconnected, and that we're not isolated from this planet. What happens here will impact, you know, somewhere else on this earth. Like, whatever plastic bag goes into the ocean might end up in Singapore, for example, right, where you are. Like, this idea that, you know, it's such a narrow way of viewing, like, or a very individualistic way of viewing what's mine, right? Like, oh, I'm just going to throw this away because that's just the trash, where I throw things away without understanding where that goes and the impact of it. So that's one piece that I think about to answer that question. And something else I've been thinking about a lot in terms of just disruption of ecosystems and roles in ecosystems. Where I'm from in the Northeast, there's an explosion of Lyme disease, which are tick-borne, but deer are and mice are main carriers of ticks. But if there were more wolves and coyotes who ate the deer, would balance out the population. But that imbalance is also a result of colonization, settler colonialism, a fear of wolves, or, you know, valuing more cattle or farm animals than the native fauna, right? So I don't know if that answers all those questions, but that's what's coming through right now.
Yeah, I appreciate that a lot. And I think you're kind of, I want to pick up on, or at least kind of highlight for folks listening to this conversation, your use of the word resource. I think I like to think about resource as a word, not getting too caught up in the semantics of it, but resource as a word, and then in relation to the word source, and how we kind of view or how kind of capitalism views the earth as resource, but people who kind of adopt like anti-capitalistic worldviews will view the earth as exhaust. And so kind of thinking about how to, I guess, reconcile those approaches to the earth strikes me as important. And I want to put a pin on that for people who are listening. And then the other thing that kind of sticks out for me is your use of the word reciprocity as well. Hannah Close, who is one of the members of our team at Advaya, she wrote about kinship. And she's very big on kind of the scholarship of kinship. So focusing on the idea of kinship, and she talked about kind of kinship as a way of relating that asks us to go beyond extracting value from the other, which is what you were talking about extracting values from plants. And she said that kinship is kind of relationship for relationship's sake, and it's for the sake of life itself, and acknowledging the deeper workings of reality by operating on the same principles as the very breath which keeps us alive, reciprocity, emergence, and sensuous awareness. And I feel like that the way you kind of responded to that question really highlights that for me. And I kind of love the reframing of relationship with the use of the word kinship, and hope that kind of that gets more adopted, but not in a way that kind of community has become commodified as well. Like you said, like everything that kind of gets commodified in this, through this system, needs to be questioned, right? In the same way that like herbalism has been questioned, has been commodified and extracted from, and kind of led to a view of plants as things that we can take and things that we can extract use from. And I think that's a good kind of segue into the question. I would love for you to share a little bit about your work at Urban Cura, which you founded. And I kind of wanted to focus on the aim of increasing collective intimacy, as you say, with plants, which we have recognized in the conversation that we're having now. Plants have kind of the history of violence and exploitation being brought across land, into land, away from land. And that can, those histories can be uncovered by understanding their original constellation of relationship, which I think is a great way to kind of situate what we're talking about in that word constellation. On the For the Wild podcast, you also talked about simultaneous and parallel histories of plants. So acknowledging that violence and exploitation, but also the ongoing historical deep relationship, but also one that's not kind of historical in the sense that you currently are practicing it. Lots of people are practicing it, that deep relationship with plants that involves care, reverence, which you talked about, and kind of throw another kind of thing in there, making this a hopefully more textured conversation. I think talking about how this is decolonizing and abolition work, and specifically to kind of give a bit of context around that, I think at this point, I hope a lot of people are more familiar with how this might be decolonizing work, in that like understanding where plants came from and how plants are kind of key to the logics of settler colonialism, how it's key to the logic of monoculturing, and then also how it's connected to kind of reductionism and Western science, and how that has led to kind of an approach to the natural world that has led to all of the crises that we're dealing with. So that's kind of the context on decolonizing work. But I would love for you to kind of focus a little bit more on the abolition side of things, because I think a lot of people are more unfamiliar with that context, and also connecting plant intimacy, collective intimacy with abolition work might be a new kind of thing that people are exploring. So knowing that, I would love for you to connect your work there with that broader framework and practice. Yeah.
That's juicy questions. Well, I'll start with plants and commodities. Right. I think a lot of the work that we're doing with Urban Cura and uncovering some of these stories, delayering, is our own personal curiosity to restore and build deeper relationships with plants that don't grow in our ecosystems, but that surround us, like coffee, sugar, cotton, indigo, rice, for example, quinoa. So many different things that we consume on a daily basis, maize, that are reduced, right? So the coffee plant in the form of a drink, a cappuccino that we might be having, or a pot of dark coffee, sugar in everything, cotton in the clothes that we're wearing, things that we're eating. But we're never in relationship to, or often, right, at least in New York City, or in the United States, and in our day-to-day life, going to the supermarket, we're not in relationship to the plant, we're in relationship with the product, this reduced form of this plant, without any story really behind it that we've learned. But that type of relationship of just buying something, right? These plants, tea, right? These plants that have really painful stories behind them, that, like I said earlier, have really shaped the world in the way that it is now. Rubber, I'm thinking about rubber in the Amazon. So many different plants and their story of slavery, of enslaving people, indigenous people from Africa. I'm thinking indigenous people in the Amazon now as I'm thinking about rubber. But indigenous people all throughout the world to exploit a plant that may have been from those territories. So for me, learning about these plants is a way to, I was saying before, restore a relationship with a plant and give reverence and acknowledgement to those terror stories that accompany them, and begin to open up our eyes to see how, like, we really live in an illusion, in terms of just like the capitalist illusion of abundance and of consumerism, of like, oh, I'm just gonna go get this package of coffee. But like, how is colonization and exploitation continuing to happen today, right? Like you were saying, the agricultural practices of monoculture and how production of coffee is impacting the soil, forest, production of sugar, and not just how the land is being exploited, but the people who are attending to these plants, harvesting them, packaging, that whole system of production to the point that it ends up in our hands is a cycle that is full of exploitation. And right now we have other options of like fair trade and ways where people are being more compensated for their labor, or they're taking into account how plants are being grown in a way that isn't extracting, you know, the earth's, the land and the soil's minerals and literal topsoil. But I think that it goes even deeper in like those plants, people, relationships, and like, what are those people that are actually tending that land and those plants and their relationship to that actual land? Like, do they own that land? Like, are they free on that land? So that's one piece with urban cura that feels really important, just like a lifelong process of being like, again, how is the world the way that it is? And like, how have we also been shaped by these plants and the movement and the migration of them? Like, how have those plants also migrated people, consensually or non-consensually? And yeah, like I said, I think we're still living in an era of colonization where resources are still being sought after. And I guess to think of like resources and source, that we also can't ignore the like geopolitics and like how that is being guided by resources and like arbitrary lines of borders. But I think of, to name the Amazon again, where I've also witnessed the ways that loggers, mining companies, oil companies are illegally moving through the Amazon, missionaries continuing to convert people. And it's like, whoa, like colonization is very alive and healthy, and how there these simultaneous parallel stories of the 500 years of colonization that the Americas have experienced from North to South America, and even with like within each landscape has experienced different times of colonization, and that there are people that are still in relationship to these plants and to land in ways that haven't been impacted by colonization and capitalism. So I think that's also really important to acknowledge, and why it's so important to listen to Indigenous people and what they're saying about how we need to live in relationship to the land, because that worldview is the worldview of relationship, not of believing that the earth is full of infinite resources that we can extract. Like, we're in a pivotal moment right now where we've always been in a pivotal moment, but the earth still has so many resources. People who are in these relationships still exist, and that we need to be listening, especially in, you know, the so-called the first world, of like people who economies that are stronger, to consider how are we shifting this system of exploitation to protect resources and people who are still defending, you know. So I've had the honor of connecting with Zapara Indigenous people in Ecuador, and seeing the ways that they're literally fighting for, they're risking their lives and to protect both their communities and their resources, but that resistance is also protecting all of us, right? It's also keeping resources, keeping life, you know. So when I say resources, I'm speaking about life. I'm speaking about the stones. I'm speaking about this, everything that this earth contains, right? So that being source, but in like an economic term, like resources, like what capitalism is trying to take. They're trying to take life, and the return is death.
I would love to invite you to talk about how the work kind of connects to abolition work.
Right.
So, and also, if you want to introduce kind of more formally or more explicitly what the work you're doing at Urban Gura is, so people get a sense of what it is, you know.
So to tie in abolition, I think of abolishing institutions and systems that are causing that death and that exploitation and that extraction. Thinking of slavery abolitionists and the different tactics that they were using in terms of boycotting sugar, for example, and using maple syrup instead, right? That relationship with the land, that wisdom of and knowing of the land for survival. So part of the practice when I think of abolition is, how are we reconnecting with land? How are we connecting to ancestral practices as a way of being sovereign, of protecting and supporting our communities so that we have the resources that we need to be healthy, to survive, that being food, that being medicine, to give us the strength to abolish these repressive systems. And as I mentioned, the prison industrial system, but how do we abolish capitalism? How do we abolish these systems that are still extracting from the earth and that are extracting from our human kin? How do we abolish these inequities within the system so that we can live in a system that promotes life, and that where we have what we need, you know, to like the baseline, like where we have food, where we have shelter, where we're rethinking how we can be in a system that is life-giving of symbiotic, collaborative communities that aren't individualistic. So some of the work that Urban Cura is doing is one of our projects is called Plants to the People, where we harvest plants that we've grown or that neighboring gardens, farms, upstate New York have grown, or really anywhere, but predominantly we've done it in New York City. And we occupy a plaza and we give out herb bundles to people. We've harvested tulsi, sweet Annie, purslane, oregano, thyme, many more herbs, and in low-income immigrant BIPOC communities, and we just give out herbs for free. And it's such a beautiful practice to just, and really actually political, to give something to someone for free. Like, this medicine is for you, it's a gift. And alongside the plants that we give, we also offer acupuncture, ear acupuncture. And that type of method was used by the Young Lords and Black Panthers. So this work is in that legacy of offering free healthcare to our community, supporting our communities in ways that they're not being supported by current system. And this isn't changing it necessarily, but it's offering a drop, an invitation to connect, to remember. So many folks that have that come and receive a bundle are remembering how their grandma would use oregano for ear infections, or how they would cook purslane in different dishes. People coming to the table when they got off the train because they just smelled the plants. So remembering the plants in the city is this radical act. Receiving these plants for free is this radical act to remember that the plants are so generous and are here to help us, and to remember that we can also heal ourselves with the earth, and that they've been such powerful tools for our survival, and that they've also been threats to the establishment for so long, which is why when I think of witch hunts in Europe and part of settler colonial history of disempowering women, you know, naming them witches, taking their relationship and that autonomy, their bodily autonomy, but also the wisdom of, oh, we can heal with plants. We can prevent so many diseases through knowing plants, that they're here to help us survive. So that's one of the our really important projects right now that feel like a huge opportunity for my own learning. And I'll share a little anecdote from the other day here in Tongva territory. We did a Plants to the People at a Ceremony of Life show. And I was making all these bundles with the help of some friends. And I was thinking, you know, I was getting really in my head about how people were going to receive these bundles, or what they were going to think, or what was going to be like the outcome. And we had purple sage, pirul moye is the same plant. We had eucalyptus, rosemary, and lavender. And I was really in my head making these bundles, and I felt the plants in a moment just really interject into my spiral and be like, shh, we're so wise. You know a little bit about what we do and like how we vibe, but we're so much more than you think we are. Like, we're the elders. We got this. Like, you've done what you needed to do, which is bring the plants, make the bundles. And from here, it's between us, the plants, and the people receiving the bundles. It was this really humbling moment of just being in deep trust and also awe and wonder and magic of, right, the plants are so wise. Like, they are our ancestors. They've been here and they're sacred. And that humility and that continuous wonder and being in a kinship relationship with them of like, let me listen. Let me listen to what they have to say. Not just like, okay, rosemary, uses for rosemary are. It's like, cool, thanks for categorizing me into this little box. Yes, I do some of those things and I can pretty much do it all. Like when I'm teaching new students, they're like, but like, so what can I use for this? What can I use for that? And they're like, oh my God, every plant does so many things. It's like, yes, like find that plant that you just go in deep relationship with, and you don't need to know every single plant to like support your digestive system, support your lungs. Like so many plants just have actions that support your whole body. So that's been a plant story that I've been holding really close to my heart, because I feel like they spoke so loudly of, get out of your head. This is not about you. Like you've done great work, and like we take it from here. Which I think is a really important lesson in listening.
Yeah, there's a lot in there again. So thank you for that. But I think what is kind of coming to mind for me at the moment is for people to have that experience of listening to plants. I can imagine people who are like foreign to having a relationship are like, what does that even mean? The plant like said something to you that was loud. It's like, but I think that like the question is then like, what needs to quieten and what needs to kind of be softer for that to be loud? And I'm thinking about to go into that space of kind of animism without commodifying it, without making it kind of the next big cool thing, but really to kind of practice that in our own lives is not something that can be taken away from us in a way that's like commodifying and extracting. I think if we practice that kind of, let's kind of be humble, let's recognize that we are walking on this earth with many other like plant ancestors that have been here longer than we ever will be. But yeah, thinking about how intimacy with plants not only seeds a sense of reverence, but also seeds a sense of humility and invites us into a practice of re-embedding ourselves into a wider earth, one that is so populated by different species still, in spite of all of kind of capitalism and what it's done to biodiversity. There is still abundance, there is still kind of those other species in conversation with us, whether or not we want to hear and whether or not we can allow ourselves to be in that space we're hearing.
That just made me think about how you could just have such a heart expanding, mind expanding, body expanding experience with the weed, the plant that's just growing through the sidewalk, if you just take the time to be with that plant and just listen. So, right, the plant, the little plant was, I mean, I don't know, but like they weren't necessarily voicing in this like anthropocentric human way, but it was, it could almost be thought of as like my older and wiser self was like, okay, your ego, your self-doubt is getting in the way. And we're going to put that to the side right now, because you're not doing this. You're doing this because of love, you know, because you want people to connect. And people will find their way to connection in a way that you can't control. Like, you can't control everything. So it was a thought process, right? And something there interjected that was softening. But I think about, you know, right now there's a whole industry of sacred, yes, sacred, not in quotes, but like sacred, powerful plant medicines. But all plants are sacred, and yes, some plants have certain constituents that open us up more quickly to really seeing parts of ourselves that otherwise, you know, maybe with dandelion, you don't receive when you drink a tea. But those are the plants that we need to be connecting with, in because they're what's growing around us. Like, I really think those are the plants that we need to be learning. What is growing around us? Not, I'm going to take a trip to the Amazon to go on a retreat and take ayahuasca, you know, and then not do the self work to integrate and change my behavior as a human on this earth. Like, spiritual capitalism is a very real thing right now, of like extracting, let me take this thing so that I can feel better, this, and we still don't feel good, right? But like that experience of just sitting, how do we connect back to source? It's right here. One of my dear friends and mentors, she's always like, you just need to go on your internal trip, your internal journey. Like, all the answers are right here. They're right here, in your breath, in your heart, like being in prayer, being in meditation, being with the sun, like being with the elements. And we can reach that wherever we are. You know, wherever we are, we can reach the source. And I really feel like it just starts with that breath. But it's having the courage and giving ourselves the permission to say, I'm going to put my phone down, I'm going to pause on my work, and I'm going to fight. That's my action of fighting capitalism today, is stopping work, resting, going for a walk, and meeting the homies, meeting the plant homies, and being like, oh my God, like, I didn't notice you yesterday, but I see you today. Like, what's your story? And that's so fun. It's so fun. You're just like, I just went on a walk before this our conversation. And like I mentioned, this territory reminds me so much of my home in Santiago. And I was seeing all these plants that I recognize, like moye, bougainvillea, floripondio, eucalyptus, nispero, that I think would be loquat in English. So many plants. The mallow, that's just growing through every crack. The chickweed. There's so much abundance here now. And yesterday, for the first time, I used a plant ID app, which was so much fun. I was like, how have I never used this before? Like, what are the needs of all these plants? which I think has its place. And then you're not really building a relationship by just taking a photo. It's like, okay, cool. Now I know the name. Let me sit with this plant for a long time. And like, and also have the humility to just be like, let me pause. I'm not harvesting anything. Also, let me be careful, because a lot of plants can cause dermatitis or give you an allergy. But yeah, so in doing the plant idea, I met this California oak. And then today on the walk, I was just seeing it everywhere. And I was like, this is so cool. Like, now I see it everywhere. And it's this never ending, lifelong experience of meeting the plants and learning about yourself. Like, they're such incredible teachers. And each season is an opportunity to learn a little bit more about them, which is so fun. Like, really, you could just spend your whole life just learning one plant.
I love that. Quite a few months ago, I wrote something about knowing plants. And in that piece, I think I was doing a bit of research about how, like, the whole plant naming process, like the scientific naming process of plants, what I kind of arrived at, that conclusion for me was that, like, yes, when you name the plants, when you ID a plant, like does the relationship with the plant kind of start or end with the naming? Like when you're on a walk, you give them names, you kind of see them and they see you and you start forming a relationship with that. That's so different from kind of the scientific naming of the plant and the IDing of that. And I think people need to kind of see that whatever way you kind of choose to name the plant, you're beginning to cultivate a sense of a relationship with that plant, a history of you and that plant. And that's such a sacred process that we can't kind of be allowed to be tainted by the way that biology and the way that kind of science has studied and classified and put into boxes and categorized kind of these plants. And so I think this is a good place to go into asking you kind of the almost last question, which is because this series is being filmed right after the spring equinox and we're emerging into a new season. And I would love for you to share maybe one of your current or favorite plant stories or relationships that are unique to this spring season. And also, I think you've done this already, but offering some ways in which folks who may be new to having relationships, like how can they kind of start and introduce themselves to this practice of knowing and cultivating intimacy, other than, of course, like if people are in New York to engage with the work that you're doing and the offerings that you have. But I mean, for people who are not in that space, what can they do?
Well, I think wherever someone is in the world and maybe listening to this, any season is a great opportunity to get to know the plants, especially winter. You get to see the trees if you're in a place that experiences winter and the falling of leaves. You get to experience the trees with just the bark, which is such a beautiful experience of building an intimate relationship. You get to see the dried up seed pods of plants. And that's a really fun time to be like, oh, that's dried mugwort. Totally different from when you see it in flower in the summer. One of my plant stories of this season, which just happened yesterday at this garden where I was experiencing this plant idea for the first time. My partner has been having a lot of like face allergies and getting rashes and just like very sensitive skin. I was on a walk and I saw this beautiful patch of chickweed. I was like, oh my God, chickweed is really good for the skin. It's so great for dry skin, for eczema, for sensitive skin. It's lubricating. It's really high in amino acids. I was like, this, we're going to have a facial in this garden. So I go back and I tell her, I'm like, okay, just lay down. I'm going to give you something that's really good for your skin. And so I just squeeze all this, I like rub the chickweed and I squeeze all this yummy green chickweed juice her face and then covered her in chickweed. I was like, I'm gonna do it too. So I went and harvested some more chickweed and both of our faces were just covered with chickweed. And I was like, do you want me to read you a little bit about chickweed? And so I was reading and to her about some of like the chickweed's actions and how it's great for pulling splinters out. And I was like, oh, so that's probably also really helpful for pulling out toxins in the skin as well. And just laying there with the chickweed was such a beautiful experience. We were sitting underneath this moya tree. The moya is originally from like Peruvian region. And you find it, I mean, Peruvian Andean, so you find it all over Peru and Chile, but also found its way into Mexico and California. So we were sitting underneath this tree and it was such a sweet moment, again, of like a plant, just like listening to the plants of like, oh, right. Like, boom, connecting. I know you. Like, you're like, here I am. And I also have a rash on my face. So I was like, oh, this will be great. Like, why haven't I thought of this before? And this is the perfect moment, not only to work with chickweed externally, but also internally, helps move our waters. It helps to enrich us minerally as well. And I was reading a little bit about chickweed yesterday and how it originally it's from Europe, but it was a green that was sold at the markets, like a really important green. And I personally love to eat chickweed. I think it's just, it just feels like, tastes green, but it's really, I love the texture. It's a little crunchy. It's great in a pesto. But I was just reminded again of like, right, this, so many greens that have fallen out of his popularity, that so many of us rely on the supermarket to get our nourishment, but that's a curated place. And so much, we're lacking so much nourishment because we're not eating foods that the earth is just growing in abundance. And so much food that comes to the supermarket is grown like in soil that's been really depleted. So that's my chickweed story. We just had like the chickweed on our face, and I was eating the chickweed as it was like hanging down. Just another thought around like beginning to connect with plants for folks who may be listening is to find a plant that is growing. It could be a tree, a shrub, that's calling your attention, and just to sit with them or stand or whatever, lay next to them, whatever is calling to you, or just sitting out front and observing them from your window. But doing that consistently every day through a whole season, through the whole year, doesn't need to be long, but just to begin to observe and notice, I think that would be the first step in building any relationship. Is, you know, observation is the first piece, observation, and then an introduction, and yeah, see, vibing, like, is there consent to hang out? Like, how does this plant being communicate? How do I feel is the way that I want to communicate with this plant that feels authentic to me? So that would be my suggestion. Just, and also then just going for a walk and being outside and letting the street, the path guide you.
Thank you for sharing that practice, and also for sharing the story. And to, I think, kind of close and to tie into this whole theme, we kind of never really spoke about it more explicitly, but I think in a lot of ways, this conversation is very related to the theme of rebirth. And I would love for you to share like a personal anecdote or a story that you're called to share in theme of rebirth to leave with us.
Honestly, I'm feeling those two stories that I just shared of giving out the bundles and the chickweed on my face right now are feeling like my rebirth story with myself. Because, and then maybe one other moment, but I feel like they've all been just working on me. They've been massaging me. They've been like whispering. And I've, right, how I'm feeling right now is, and with spring and this awakening of like, and I feel this, I think every spring is like, I get to learn them all over again. I get to learn them all over again. Like, oh, I didn't notice this. Like, well, I'm on the West Coast right now, but I saw eucalyptus in flower, and I haven't seen that many times. It was so beautiful. I was like, oh, they're so fuzzy and like so cute. And just anytime I get to see a plant in a phase where I haven't seen it before, it feels like something's, like my heart is just opening a little more. But yeah, those two stories, I feel like, felt like a big cleanse, and like, you are still on the path of learning. You will forever be on the path of learning, and like, stay humble, stay curious. Stay curious, you know, stay in that space of wonder, like a baby, you know, just continuing to get really like low and observe and feel like, if you know the plant, like, never taste the plant if you don't know what plant that is. So that's my rebirth story right now, just like really being reminded by the plants to listen and to be curious. And I was standing under the sun yesterday, and I just also felt the sun being like just affirming, being like, you're on your path, you're doing great, like keep walking on your path. Keep feeling yourself, keep breathing, keep feeling into what you're doing, keep allowing yourself to be guided by these plants, and like don't fall into the self-doubt, don't fall into deceiving myself. And I think right before spring, when you've been in winter for a long time, like just kind of hit some lows and just can fall into that seasonal depression, and spring is just coming and like with this big birthing energy, like here, like see yourself, see your beauty, like you are shining, you also have gifts just like me, this plant, you have gifts, see your gifts, don't compare yourself with the other beings, you know, like we each have our unique gift, and how do we all collaborate? So that's how I would answer that. And in terms of just staying in touch with Urban Cura and what we're doing, we have in New York City, we have many Plants to the People events coming up this summer. Again, they're free plants that we give out. And we'll have some in-person classes as well this summer, both in New York City and upstate. And online, we have really fun classes coming up, like really amazing storytellers, historians, seed keepers that will be sharing with us this year. So if you want to learn more, can check out our website.
Antonia, thank you so much for this wonderful conversation. And also all of those affirmations, I feel so empowered. It's a good reminder that kind of, even though it's the kind of changing of the seasons, every kind of day, regardless of the changing of the seasons, is kind of a new rebirth, a new opportunity to learn and grow alongside plants.
Absolutely. I love what you just said. The rising sun is our birth, and the setting sun is just such a good moment to be like, I'm letting go of all this shit that I don't need. Mm-hmm. Like, let me go to sleep feeling calm, wake up, do the things I need to do that make me feel good, like tend to my sacred body.
This brings us to the end of the main conversation in this episode. I would now like to invite you to listen to some reflection prompts by Haley Thomas. As this podcast series explores the essence of rebirth and its many manifestations in nature, I invite you to think of reflection as a medium for rebirth. In a state of curiosity, we birth pathways for possibility, insight, and enriched perspectives that may open our minds and our hearts, empowering us to live our lives guided by a sort of intentional wonder. So as you sit with each interview in the series, you're invited to take a few moments to dig into the topic at hand and ponder how these conversations might take root in your life. In episode 1, we explored seeding relationships with the land. And in this conversation, we've come to remember our role as guests and temporary caretakers of this earth. And this remembrance prompts the question, how might we accept the invitation to our duty of care? There's this unspoken language between all non-human life forms, rooted in maintaining connection, nourishment, and balance. I feel this communicates a really powerful message about our current perception of individualism. We've yet to remember that our individuality, our gifts, healing potential, and the power of our being
shines most radiantly from a place of wholeness, not fragmentation. And just as plants offer their unique functions as individuals, they also serve a greater, more holistic and communal purpose, creating passageways for other life forms to distinctively contribute to and maintain ecosystems. Without the illusion of separatism and through the prioritization of community, ironically, our individuality is given more space to be nurtured, to shine, and ultimately, to be of meaningful and nutritive service to the whole. Through the following prompts, let's take a reflective stroll through the themes of plant intimacy and kinship, curiosity by way of stillness, and the lineage of reciprocity. Feel free to simply be with this inquiry and allow the questions to simmer, or actively engage through pen and paper journaling, audio journaling, or even in dialogue with your community. Many of us are displaced and occupying land that does not hold our ancestry. How do we create new traditions of care and relationship with the land that respects this nuanced, new age context while honoring indigenous plant and human histories? In your lineage, how has your connection to nature changed throughout the generations? Perhaps your great-grandmother was a gardener or a forager, or your people come from lands rich in certain medicinal herbs or vegetation. What are some ways you might re-engage with ancestral land and plant connections? What natural elements speak to you? What praxis can you explore to cultivate intimacy with those elements of nature? And finally, what plants are in your area, and how can you learn more about their stories? All parts of life act as catalysts, and perhaps misguided individuation, increasing feelings of disconnection, and the ecological harm that comes as a result are a call to return to wholeness through cultivating new ways of being in relationship with the land. So as we continue to reflect on re-engaging with nature through the lens of lineage, present embodiment, and future seeding, may we allow quiet curiosity to guide our acknowledgement of the sovereignty of the earth and help us better experience the complexity and intelligence within nature, that which is enveloping and providing for us at all times.
Thank you, dear listener, for being with us. This episode's musical offering comes from the song Magnolias by Leah Thomas, provided by Spirit House Records. Extra thanks to Haley Thomas for offering reflection prompts and Jia Song for illustrating the podcast series' cover art. Rebirth is a four-part podcast series produced by Advaya, a platform for transformative education. We create learning programs with the leading minds of our time to shift perspectives, transform our relationships, and enable thriving lives in harmony with the natural living world. The series is produced in partnership with Stella McCartney Beauty, who believes that there is another way to effectively care for our skin. Their products have been formulated to work in harmony with the skin, supporting its key functions of regeneration and protection. Housed in recyclable packaging with a refill system, the range is completely vegan and cruelty-free. Shop the collection at stellamccartneybeauty.com.